I invested in Ethereum at $3 to $7. Right now it's currently sitting at what, like 3,200. So I've gotten into multiple 1,000x altcoins in cryptocurrency, and it started my entrepreneurial journey of trying to educate others.
We know that building wealth comes from owning businesses and making investments. Yet why still do nearly half of businesses fail in the first 5 years, and why do others lose it all in their investments?
Welcome to the Wealth Watchers Podcast, your resource for building a massive net worth. We bring real stories from real people who are experts in business and investing, who will share secrets and actionable strategies to amassing wealth and achieving success. Brought to you by Happy Camper Capital. And now, your hosts, Justin Hoggett and Adam Lendy.
Welcome back to the Wealth Watchers Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lendy. With me is my co-host, Justin Hoggett. Justin, how are you today?
Hey, Adam. Doing well. How are you doing? What's new?
So much going on. Personally, professionally, you know, getting in the midst of a move, selling some property, getting out and playing still. What about you?
Yeah, that doesn't sound very stressful. Just busy as normal. But looking forward to today's discussion.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to bring on, especially a topic that, you know, you and I have been kind of chatting quite a bit about recently. Alex Lorenzo, Alex, the CEO of Fundamental Secrets. Alex, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys doing? Yeah, let's talk some crypto because it's been crazy as well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're kind of excited about it. I was the holdout. I think I held out a little longer than Justin. It took some of my mentors, you know, in my life telling me that's something we need to get into to do it. So I think I'm dabbling in maybe the safe end of the pool, but you know, I'd love to, I guess, jump in a little further and learn more about it from you.
Yeah. I jump into the safe end. I jump into the deep end as well. I primarily have a group, so I get to see all different types of investors. And you know, to be honest with you, cryptocurrency in general is crazy, so there is no safe end. But from what I tell all of my people, you know, the new safe is risk. Considering the climate, you know, macroeconomics, what's happening in the world, in general, from what I've seen, people are risk on. So, cryptocurrency in general is risky, but, you know, the current set of conditions, I think it's the great bet.
Yeah, I think investing in the US dollar is a risky thing myself, but that's just, you know, given the current climate as well. But listen, Alex, before we jump in and I guess hear what you have to say, I guess I'd like to learn a little bit more about who you are. So can you give us a little background on you and kind of what brought you to this and why does you do what you do?
Yeah, so kind of thoroughbred entrepreneur. I did really bad in school, all throughout school, but I liked making money a lot. I used to sell candy in middle school all the way up into selling iPhones. Selling things on eBay, pretty much anything I could to survive on my own. In and out of jobs a lot, you know, kind of like the typical stereotype of person doesn't want to work for somebody else. And then I invested in Ethereum at $3 to $7. Right now, it's currently sitting at what, like 3,200. So I've gotten into multiple 1,000x altcoins in cryptocurrency. And basically from there, it started my entrepreneurial journey of trying to educate others on how to invest in Web 3.0. And the future of finance. And this has pretty much been my bread and butter.
That's awesome. What's Web 3.0? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, so Web 3.0 is the next generation of the internet. So currently right now, Web 2.0, there's a lot of centralized entities. So you'll see things like, for example, Google, where they have a large, like, centralized databases. And actually, it's funny. Right now, as we speak, Instagram and Facebook are currently down. And the reason for that is because they're vulnerable to these centralized attacks. They have all this hardware, and they pretty much have a monopoly when it comes to Google, Facebook, and big tech in general on people's attention. So what Web 3.0 does is kind of decentralizes that. And a lot of the applications you use are going to be used kind of like it's a futuristic way of using it. I can basically connect to any interface on the internet without giving away my true identity. So like when you log into, for example, Facebook or any app on the internet, you use an email address and a password. With Web 3.0, it's simply a connection to your public address. And what this does is it gives you access to all of their features. It just happens to be that right now, the two big spaces of Web 3.0 are decentralized finance. And I'm sure everybody has heard of NFTs. So that's kind of like the current killer applications that are emerging in Web 3.0, if that makes sense. But it's much bigger than that.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that makes sense to me because the blockchain, which is what cryptos are based on, is inherently decentralized, correct? Like everybody who uses it has a copy of it. Isn't that kind of how it works?
Correct. So Bitcoin was invented to decentralize money. And they use a database structure called blockchain technology, which is cryptographic technology. It's used to, it's like a puzzle solving, right? It makes it highly secure. So Bitcoin has certain properties like it's unhackable, it's open, it's permissionless. Anyone on planet Earth can use Bitcoin, no matter, you know, who you are, how old you are. And it has no connection to traditional finance. So they took this same technology and they're just embedding it because Bitcoin was the perfect money. Now they're embedding it in code and like because they've noticed, you know, there's other places where there's kind of control and structure. Right. So they're just trying to decentralize everything online, basically.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you mentioned it's not money, but it's, I mean, it's indexed to the dollar, right? Like that's how, at least in the States here, we assign it a value. I guess if we pull that away, I guess, how do we determine the value and like what you could buy with it? If for example, if you were to replace all of the world's currencies with cryptocurrency, you know, I'm trying to figure out how that looks.
The world reserve currency. That's a good question. That's a really good question. So right now the world reserve currency is the United States dollar, right? So everything's paired to the United States dollar. It's the same with Forex, same exact thing right now. Most people are looking to accumulate it because it's the world reserve currency, right? It's the last domino, right? So right now, Bitcoin is that same thing in crypto. So when I trade, it's typically to increase my Satoshi or sats. So in a world in the future, and I'm talking about maybe 50 to 100 years, it's not going to happen anytime soon. If Bitcoin becomes the world reserve currency, then you would be again looking at it as USD right now, if that makes sense.
It does. Now, you know, I guess, and part of what kind of pushed me into this, and I think this all will tie together in some way, is, you know, obviously ever since the US dollar went off the gold standard, you know, that's what's caused the inflation that we have today. The government keeps printing more and more of it. Now, obviously, for people who are holding crypto, you know, that puts us in a great situation. You know, as the US dollar inflates, our crypto is automatically worth more. You know, and the thing is, and I guess what I found attractive about Bitcoin and Litecoin and the couple that I jumped into was that they're finite, that there's only a certain amount of them by the way they're designed, so that when they're all mined and that's it. You know, just like the dollar would have been if it was tied to actual, you know, the treasury notes that were tied to gold. So I think that would probably create a more stable global economic indicator if you used a crypto as it.
I agree. The fact that that's like kind of the property of transparency is that you can't really find, like, for example, finite gold. You're going to always find new reserves of gold. Who knows if they even have like a big one that they're trying to like not disclose. I mean, obviously that's a conspiracy theory, but at the end of the day, if you can't see it, you can't really verify it. And I think that's the point of blockchain, is that you can see it right now that Bitcoin's finite and nobody could ever argue with you. And it's a definite answer. It's called artificial truth, right? You can see it. It's a public blockchain. And actually money worked like this back in the day. They would move rocks to confirm somebody's value transfer. And when, you know, paper came out and it got really complex, makes it very hard to verify what's going on. So, you know, this is where blockchain, I think, has its place.
Yeah, definitely. I think the only maybe Achilles heel to it is that you have to keep track of your wallet information, and that if you lose it, it's gone for good.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. That's definitely the big problem, is the learning curve and the interface of cryptocurrency. But remember, it takes 40 years in some cases, and you can contribute that to, for example, Google, to get to massive generalized applications. And we're only on year 12. So things are happening now as we speak. For example, actually, they just put in a proposal. I forgot the exact number proposal for Ethereum, which is where DeFi happens. And this is most of the transactions where you can actually, you know, get your lost accounts through social verification methods. So you'll be able to lose it the same way you just said and get the account back. Now, what does this have to do with Bitcoin? Well, if you can get Bitcoin on the Ethereum blockchain and you hold Wrapped BTC, which is currently working right now, and I use it all the time to generate interest, then you can get your Bitcoin back. Exactly what you just said. They are making an answer within the next couple of weeks on the Ethereum blockchain. So we have a lot of upgrades. Just like the internet was very clunky, well, which is a side tangent. I do want to talk about it a little bit. NFTs. If you look at the NFTs right now, the ones that are worth the most, the ones that are selling for 2.2 million, 2.3 million, are the ones that look clunky. They look like the old JPEGs back in the day, and this is for good reason. It kind of represents the culture of where we're at right now, right? Like I said, it takes 4 years for a generalized software to really take flight. 40, excuse me. So we have a long way to go, and it's very, you know, this is a good start.
Now, help me understand NFTs a little better. I've been researching this recently, and I still don't know if I have a total grasp on it or why, but the idea is that we're tokenizing some sort of an asset, be it an image or music in some cases. And, you know, whereas I guess it's not really being assigned a value, because it's more, it's that value is being assigned by the people who purchase it, correct?
Correct. That's correct. It's kind of like an auction mechanism rather than an order book, right? So for, you know, art, there's no real price. People attribute price to it. The artists themselves tell you what it's worth, and then people auction for it. It's the same thing with NFTs. And it's the same thing with Fortnite skins. And it's the same thing for with pretty much every online asset, or you can't even call it an asset, any item on the internet. So that's the beauty of NFTs, is that it's limitless. You know, I was actually just talking to one of my friends, one of this new world game that just came out. He's a big time gamer, and he's no-lifing it. He's spending 12 hours a day, and he has a full-time job. I'm like, how do you find time to do this, right? You're running bots. And there's these little kids that are doing this to get these skins or get this weapon in it, you know, in a game. And the beauty of NFTs that I think people are not looking at is the fact that you can't regulate that. DeFi, you can regulate. The banks are going to want to keep their power. But when it comes to NFTs, this is just in-game creations, you know, and it's considered art. And as you know, art non-taxable. So it's just a big wide open gap for investment opportunities, in my personal opinion, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now these digital pieces, though, I guess here's what I have trouble with. Obviously, if we talk about art, and I look at an original painting from a museum, you know, it's painted in oil paints, let's say, you can't duplicate that without repainting the thing. However, if it's a digital piece of artwork, couldn't somebody, are there digital rights tied to this? Is there some sort of licensing?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out what keeps people from duplicating it and distilling the value.
No, that's a good point. So the point of NFTs is when you mint them, there's only a select amount, and you can see the rarity. So you could literally see it on the website. They'll mint like maybe 5,000 pieces. And then there's attributes that are more rare and less rare. So the community gives the whole collection value. So if a lot of people are interested in this art, the community will band together on Discord. Investors will come in, and that's what they look for. They look for uniqueness, community, things like that, different aspects. And the rarer pieces cannot be duplicated. And you can verify it from the original contract address on the blockchain, which is, like we talked about earlier, open and verifiable. So basically, this allows artificial value to be stored on the internet, which we would previously never had access to ever. Because just like you said, I can just go right click, copy, and paste. But the thing is, for people that don't know blockchain, this doesn't make sense, because they're like, well, the picture's right there. I could just like crop it. But once people start understanding, like, for example, a block explorer might be the new Google. Like right now you're searching Google for things. In the future, you're going to be searching the block explorer for things. That's what's going to happen. And on that block explorer, you're going to be able to see the ranking of who owns which NFT. And you can right-click copy all you want, but hey, I have a CryptoPunk worth $1.2 million because Stephen Curry just bought one and increased the value of my collection. And I have it right here. It's right here. And yes, somebody can copy and paste the actual image, but the metadata, in which I can verify right here in front of your face with the collection, is mine. So it's like the rarity, and you'll know who the original owner is, even though, and you could say the same thing for the Mona Lisa. I can go copy it right now. I can literally take a printer, a big high quality printer, you know, and put it on my wall. But the original is the original, right? And there's ways of verifying that. It just turns into, you know, maybe an art collector verifying it to now the blockchain and anyone being able to verify it, if that makes sense.
Got it. So it's more the intrinsic value applied from the authenticity of it.
Exactly. It's the community bound effect. It's the people wanting it. It's the inclusion, like Bored Ape Yacht Club. They get like special benefits being a part of the club. You know, and all these people have like cryptocurrency, like a lot of them are cryptocurrency influencers. So you get to connect with them and stuff like that. And in general, it's just weird thing. Like it is really weird. Like, for example, if Elon Musk tweets, hey, buy Bitcoin, Bitcoin price increase, there's no actual value being generated. But if the price increase, there's some type of community. It's kind of like a social value or however you attribute it, this new kind of internet thing that's happening.
Okay. So NFT it's not necessarily a currency of any kind. It's more just a different means of acquiring assets.
It could be assets. It could be anything. It's just putting a digitized token of ownership on anything. I just don't want to say, I don't want to put it into a box because it can turn into, for example, turning a house into fractionalized ownership. This decentralized autonomous organization, a group of 50 people buy one house and they all own 1/50th of the house. Does that make sense?
So we're talking putting contracts into a digital form?
Yeah, smart contracts. It's currently happening right now with decentralized finance.
Interesting. The real estate industry seems to be way behind the rest of the world. I'm curious, you know, how long that'll take to catch on when we can actually recognize digital contracts at, you know, the state government level.
To be honest with you, not anytime soon. Probably, if I were to guess, like 20 years, 10 to 20 years. It depends on the cycle theory of Bitcoin, if it plays out. If we see another halving event where we see a little bear market, kind of everybody calling the bubble to pop, right? If we see that again, then it might take a little bit longer. But if we don't see that, which a lot of people are predicting this cycle, we won't see it again. This is the last hoorah. Then I would say it happens shorter, maybe in 7 years, 10 years, something like that.
Yeah. I just signed on a closing on a property today, and it was, you still have to go in person and sign in paper and pen, blue ink, you know, show your ID. We're still a ways off. The real estate world hasn't caught on to even DocuSign yet.
I agree. The other day, my dad was trying to take some money out of his retirement because we outcompeted his whole entire portfolio in like a couple months with what he gave me as an investment. And he had to send in a letter. He had to send in a signed letter. I'm like, what are we doing here? You know, it's crazy.
So explain the whole premise of government control and bank control and power and whatnot, and how this whole thing is going to affect that, in your opinion.
So, okay. So I think it's a get with it or get left behind situation. So as you can see this with pretty much every single big tech that they, you know, governments have denied. You know, it, for example, there's a good, really, really good example of this called the Pirate Bay. It's a peer-to-peer technology and it's been banned and sued out of existence. But right now I can go and pop open the website on United States server and get any movie or picture I want. And the reason for that is because it's unstoppable unless they turn off the internet. So this is nothing new. Actually, Elon Musk just said this, and I've been saying it for years. He just literally, I think it was like 2 days ago. Bitcoin can be slowed down, but it cannot be stopped because of peer-to-peer technology. So when it comes to the world powers that want to control money, they're going to do everything in their power to get like a central-backed digital currency, which we're actually seeing might happen this week. So that's a really good question. I don't know if you thought that out before, but yeah, that's actually might happen. And they're going to force it onto the people, right? I think that's a you know, accepted theory that a lot of people I respect are kind of agreeing with right now. So they're going to, it's a get with it, a get left behind. We see El Salvador right now adopting it. We're going to see the smaller countries that have to adopt because they have no other choice because their currency is hyperinflated start to trickle in. Right. And then once we see that and the people effect start to get big enough, then like I say in all my videos, I say to my YouTube, but it's a get with it or get left behind. We see it in payment processing right now. We see that Cash App was the first to accept it. Their revenue increased. Like they just destroyed all competition because of cryptocurrency as a new revenue source. Now we see it on Robinhood. Now we see it on PayPal. Either they do it or their competition beats them. Right. And we're going to see that with small countries. It's actually happening right now. Maybe this is a little prediction. I don't know when you guys drop your podcast, but I'm pretty sure within the next couple of months, it's going to happen in Brazil. It's going to be accepted as a legal form of currency and we're going to see it trickle up. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe they shut the internet down. Maybe they tell all countries on earth to ban it at once because China's banned it probably 7 times. And they're one of the biggest economies on planet Earth. And, you know, a lot of they're actually bigger than the United States when it comes to investing in Bitcoin. So that has never stopped it. So there's only ultimatum scenarios I see stopping Bitcoin, but other than that, it's just a time. It's a time thing. It's just gonna take. They're gonna slow it down, I think.
Yeah, I heard obviously about the. I didn't know there were multiple bans, but I just heard recently about China banning Bitcoin. And I guess, is there a way to actually physically present or prevent them from transmitting that through the internet? Like, I know they've done a good job with other tech companies of disabling their websites. Like a lot of the social networks and such can't be accessed in China, but it can that even be done with cryptocurrency?
It's impossible. It's literally impossible because anyone can send it from anywhere as long as you block your IP. They might come to your house, but how could they go to, you know, 10 million homes, right? Just like I said, the Pirate Bay, it's technically illegal. But anyone can download any movie or any song as long as they have access to an internet connection. So like I said, it's not just China. It would have to be like every country on earth at the same time banning it for and then, you know, them taking action on that, which would be also very difficult. But internet in general, you can run a Bitcoin transaction off of a radio frequency. So it doesn't matter. As long as people are willing to adopt it, it will continue.
Right, because you're just transmitting data.
Yeah.
And okay, that makes sense. You know, and obviously you're talking about the other countries adopting. I think it was Venezuela I heard recently named Bitcoin as their national currency, which I find slightly interesting considering, from what I understand, they're one of the more underserved countries for internet access. So given that that is a critical component of, you know, using cryptocurrency, I imagine that's going to make transactions down there difficult.
Yeah, it's going to make it difficult, but it's also, I think, going to build infrastructure for crypto companies that want to potentially get some like a more of a user base and stuff like that. So I think it's a wide open gap for, and this is why you see El Salvador, for example, you could become a citizen if you invest 2 Bitcoin. It was either 1 or 2 Bitcoin. Don't quote me on this, but I'm like 99% sure. If you invest 2 Bitcoin into their economy, so if you buy like a beach house or whatever the case is, you can become a citizen of El Salvador. So they're incentivizing people. And we see this in Puerto Rico right now. It's currently a tax haven for cryptocurrency. So them trying to get ahead, I think, that's the power move, for what I've seen for cryptocurrency.
It's interesting. Puerto Rico, you know, I figured our federal government had kind of a tight rein on that. That's why they got, you know, Coinbase working with them and such. You know, and part of that goes back to, you know, I guess Justin's original question is, you know, maybe the governments won't have easy ability to regulate, you know, whether we can or can't do it. What's the future look like for them, I guess, you know, trying to gain access to it for taxation purposes? Because, you know, there's already talk right now with the new tax plan coming out about our government having access to our bank accounts and credit cards to see what we're spending money on.
That's a really good question. I don't think anybody really knows, including the federal government, because they can't identify what it really means. I don't think anyone can. I think the step towards them trying is good to help cryptocurrency, but nobody's came up with that answer yet. It's very hard because we don't know what, because if, for example, if I sell Bitcoin to Ethereum, is that really a taxable event? Because I'm selling one asset into another, right? So there's a lot of questions. Right now, there's like tax softwares that will automatically do it for you. But in general, I've heard of that. Every $600 transaction is going to be Cash App, PayPal. I don't know, man. They keep moving towards looking at our privacy, you know, and getting in that realm. We can go down, we can go down that path if you want. But in general, as long as you guys are good with your taxes, when it comes to cryptocurrency, you should be fine. Like you're honest about what you do and you follow it as closely as you possibly can.
Right. Well, I know for now, when I did my taxes last year, of course, you know, it's kind of a self-reporting thing on at least the cryptos then. And I know I heard a podcast not too long ago. So former person who worked for the government who, you know, worked specifically in cryptos for the FBI and is now on the board at Coinbase. I don't remember her name, but she mentioned, of course, you know, Coinbase, you know, in an effort to stay in business, you know, and stay above board, has been working with the IRS, you know, complying and sending 1099s when necessary to people for their transactions. But, you know, obviously, you know, you can move your crypto to an offshore wallet and do transactions and our government would never have a clue, correct?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you could always go that route. Yeah, you could definitely do that. There's a lot of ways to mix your crypto too. IP scramble, non-doxed accounts. Like, there's so many ways. I mean, they already do it with the United States dollar. So it's like nothing new, to be honest. It's just a different form of doing it. But yeah, there's always a way to get around the government restriction, right?
Not that we're looking to get around taxes and do things, you know, in a shady way. But Alex, I guess, you know, like I said, I was a holdout for a long time. You know, I looked at crypto as something that it just seemed like a game to me. I didn't see the value in it. Like I said, my big aha was it was actually on Robert Kiyosaki's podcast. You know, he's been advocating for years to buy gold and silver, and he's, you know, recently switched over to everybody should buy Bitcoin. And, you know, it was kind of me hearing what I mentioned earlier that, you know, obviously it's finite, right? And it's estimated that when Bitcoin's fully mined out, that they're going to be worth $1 million. Right. So there's potentially a huge value to it. And I, that was what clicked with me and got me started. What would you say to somebody who is, you know, on the fence and still not sure if they should do it yet?
Yeah. So we can go like the real technical way. And I can explain every little detail of the properties of money, or we can go the very basic way. I like going this way. It's much better. Typically what the governments fight the hardest play out the best, right? Especially if it's something that just look at the credibility around crypto. Look at the greatest people building things right now. And then you could also look at, for example, the old credibility and the old banking system. And you can kind of just watch what they're saying. And in general, if you just listen to people that are smarter than you, you know, I'll point you in the right direction. And the credibility behind cryptocurrency now, it's just pretty much like, if you think it's a Ponzi scheme, you really don't know what you're talking about. You know, at this point, like it's over. Like if you would ask me 3 years ago, hey, it's a Ponzi scheme, it's like, I would have been, okay, I would have to fight you on that one. But now it's pretty much accepted. There's Bitcoin ETFs. There's four potentially coming out now. We have billionaires invested. We have central bank digital currencies coming out to play. So in general, I think it's just to learn from somebody else. It's not really a question anymore, if that makes sense.
Sure. Why should you do it?
The upside potential, asymmetrical bet, the current climate, the stock market is propped up. Corporate buybacks, it's pretty much rigged. And a lot of what's going on in traditional finance, in my personal opinion, on a long super, I hope no one takes this personal, but on a long-term perspective, I think it's topped out. I think there's a lot more downside than upside. I look at life as going up and down. There's goods and bads and everything. And if you just look at the S&P 500 chart, if you look at any of the charts and no basic technical analysis, there's more downside than upside. There's more risk than reward. And I trade risk. So right now, the asymmetrical bet right now is things that are hedging against what's going on in the world. There's obviously supply chain issues and all types of macroeconomic conditions that are in a negative territory, considering, you know, the Black Swan event and what's going on with the world and how people can't work anymore. So hedging a little bit against that, maybe putting 5 to 10%. I personally, if I told my friend, I get a little bit more aggressive, I say 30%. You know, of your portfolio against hedge, you know, how is that a bad thing? And it doesn't have to be just crypto. I mean, if you don't feel comfortable with that, buy gold. You know, there's a lot of other investments. I think cryptocurrency has the most upside considering the market cap, though, if you look at the market cap.
And talking about crypto, I mean, do you know how many cryptocurrencies there are? I mean, I've heard over 1,000 for sure, but
yeah.
Okay, so how many?
There's probably over like 100,000.
100,000. Okay. Add some zeros. Okay. So how in the world do you pick and how do you see some playing out? I mean, obviously we can't all be on 100,000 different currencies, cryptocurrencies. So how do you see this playing out and what do you do to choose the right one in a sense?
That's a really good question. So I have a 3-tier system I usually use to filter out the cryptos. So I use fundamental analysis considering, okay, so there's ways to trade. I don't know if you guys are in the stock market, right? You got technical analysis, fundamental analysis, sentiment analysis. There's all different algorithmic trading, right? So the reason why I picked fundamental analysis specifically for cryptocurrency is because it's very volatile and very low market cap. Like I'm talking about some of these coins, their liquidity is so low. It's like 50 million, 20 million, 25 million. So in these cases, looking at price action is irrelevant because one whale can come in and pump the price with one buy order, right? So price action is not as important, but what's important is picking winners in individual sectors. So what I typically do is I find like a problem in crypto. So for example, let's think of a hypothetical problem. Right now, a big problem is regulation in DeFi. Regulation in DeFi is a huge issue because, you know, they don't know how to tax it for whatever situation. So what's happening is we're seeing a big move to gaming gaming kind of decentralized applications. So the big problem is, you know, for example, what's a liquidity protocol? What's a decentralized exchange that gives you access to these gaming protocols? If I see 10 projects making that, then I use fundamental analysis to weed out the best versus the worst, right? And I look at the you know, the experience behind the people. I look at the marketing. I look at their website. I look at every variable. So there's qualitative and quantitative ways of trying to come to an answer, right? And this is what you would call qualitative. So a lot of times people come and they try to do fundamental analysis. They don't have a business. They don't know how things run, right? Like, I've built a business and I've participated on as an advisor for multiple businesses. So I know, you know, what ticks the right way. And if you have, I have like a checklist, it's like 150 different variables where I pretty much just 1 out of 10, every little variable, like what's this CEO's personality type? How's the marketing? Is it a hair on fire problem? That's a big one. This is a good concept for your viewers or listeners. Excuse me. I'm used to YouTube. Does the product solve the last problem 10 times better? If I had my hair on fire and you wanted to sell me water, what's the likelihood of me buying that water? It's pretty much guaranteed, right? So let me ask you a question. If I offered you 9% APY on USDC and insured your money, so if you gave me $100,000, I'll give you 9% guaranteed. And if it goes belly up, you get your money back instantly, no matter what, no questions asked. Would that be 9 to 20 times better than 0.01% on your bank account? Yes, it's a hair on fire problem. And this is why they banned lending from Coinbase and they threatened to sue, even though we know it's not a security. It's not legally qualified as security. They're going to threaten, right? And they're going to try to stop it because it's 10 to 20 to 30 times better. If we did the math, it would be like more like 40 times better than the current product, right? So you want to weed out the qualitative things and wait longer term with good risk management. That's kind of the short answer. Fundamental analysis, risk management, penny stock type investing, diversification, and that's where you get like your 100x's, 50x's, and stuff like that.
So that sounds a little bit complicated for the new people. So what would you suggest for them to take?
Yeah. So if you just getting in, what I typically tell people is get on Coinbase app, wait for a massive drop because we all know Bitcoin pops, right? We all know Bitcoin does like those 20, 30% retraces. Typically, if you dollar cost average into those, whatever amount of money you have, I tell people very basic. If you have $5,000 to your name, split it up into a couple of lots, maybe 5 lots of 1,000, wait for a 30% drop, go ahead and put your 1,000 in. If it goes down further, at least you have more money to invest. This strategy protects against volatility and makes it very easy to invest. But if you just go all in like on Bitcoin, you know, when it's at 100K, good luck. You're going to have a bad experience. But if you just do it like just small lots, you'll be good.
And I've been told by a lot of people, both people that don't do it and people that do it, is that it's a big gamble. How would you respond to that?
Everything's a big gamble. You know, me deciding to get out of bed and drive here is a big gamble. Something can happen on the road. The question is, in my personal opinion, how good of a bet is it, right? So I don't have my 100% of my net worth in cryptocurrency. That's stupid, right? But what I do have, considering my understanding of crypto, I have a larger than average. For the regular person, a hedge against monetary inflation, making a 1% bet on your net worth is not that big of a deal. At that point, the risk is higher in you not making that bet, especially what's going on with the current world right now. Right now, when you keep USD, that's a bet. You could lose 8 to 12% on inflation just this year. That's a bad bet. Because it's even worse in my personal opinion, because at least in crypto, you know it's a bet. A lot of people don't know inflation is going to eat 8 to 12%. So it's making you comfortable in you know, a dying currency, right? And also the opportunity cost, right? So people don't even understand what that means. Like, you lose 12% to inflation and then you're losing 7 to 12% on the S&P 500 opportunity cost. So 25% a year, like 20% a year, I know those are like outrageous numbers, but that's a bet. Right. So I say small percentages, risk management in general is a good thing. And, you know, like I said, I'm a futurist. I look at the future and this looks like Web 3.0. So that's the bet I'm willing to take.
Are there tools out there that people can use to do some of this fundamental analysis?
That's a hard part about crypto, being that it's so early. There is a CoinGecko, shows you all the cryptocurrencies and a lot of different metrics on it. CoinMarketCap. also shows you that. It depends on how serious you're diving. If you go into decentralized finance, we have applications like Zerion that allow you to track your cryptocurrency. But in general, there's a lot of software. That's the thing about Web 3.0 that's a little bit different. With centralized entities, they give you all the features within one, right? So in decentralized finance, it's a little bit different in the fact that you get one wallet and it connects to a lot of different features. So it's like a more decentralized approach, if that makes sense. But the basic ones are like CoinMarketCap, CoinGecko, TradingView. TradingView allows you to do some TA. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then a lot of different cryptos have come up as from people that say, well, you should definitely get this one, or, you know, this one's going to be hot and here's why. And then in my own personal endeavor into this was it became impossible to figure out how to even buy it, how to get it. So is that a common problem, or I don't know, is that me?
It just depends on how deep you get. If you're trying to find a coin with 25 million market cap, yeah, it would be pretty difficult for someone that doesn't know anything about crypto. But if you're trying to get into like a fairly well-known crypto, it should be easy. It should be just Coinbase buy, just like you would off of Robinhood.
And so would you say that we should stay away from those hard to find, how to buy ones, or just go for the mainstream?
It's high risk, high reward. It depends on your risk tolerance. It depends on your risk tolerance. It's how serious you want to take it. If you want to do it passively, I suggest you never touch a decentralized protocol ever. But you just stay on Coinbase and you'll get higher than average returns. You'll definitely get more than like 50 to 100% a year. If you want to get crazy and lose all your money in one shot, but then also you can 20x your money in a couple weeks, you should definitely dive into decentralized finance. Decentralized finance, yep.
You know, I look at it being just like, I guess, any other investing in the stock market, really. I mean, you could invest in small cap IPOs and you have a great chance of, you know, multiplying your investment, but you're taking a huge gamble. If you didn't do your diligence on the company you're investing in, you know, you could be throwing your money away, or again, you could be 20xing your money in a short period of time. So, I mean, I see the same rules applying, right? I mean, it's just a different platform.
The good point to add to that, is that there's another layer of asymmetric. So basically, if you look at the big market of broad money, the S&P 500 is much bigger. So if we're indexing all these companies, right, it's a magnitude of probably 10 to 15 times bigger than crypto. So it's actually, I would say there's another layer to that, where in cryptocurrency, sometimes I'll buy a coin, it might not do well, but just for the simple fact that the whole market is increasing, it increases as well. So IPOs, in a sense, I would say, or especially penny stocks, and I know people that do this, it's a lot harder because the market's already competitive. It's already competitive. In cryptocurrency, if the whole market grows, you can close your eyes, pick 10 cryptocurrencies on CoinGecko, and you'll probably hit 7 to 8 out of 10 of them because they're so small and the whole market's so small and Bitcoin moves the market. You don't really see something like that in stocks. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Bitcoin definitely dictates where a lot of these small market cap, regardless of the use case, where they go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Alex, I mean, this has been incredibly helpful. You know, I'd be curious to know a little more about the fundamental secrets and what it is you do.
Yeah, so it's just a standard software where we kind of like have our prediction models on the top 100 cryptocurrencies and where they're going to potentially go. Obviously, you know, it's we try to keep it above 50% accurate, but these things have their gray areas. And we also have coaching, and we just a digital course, pretty much the whole nine yards. Live Q&As and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure everybody's seen it in the stock world. Something very similar to that, where we teach like cryptocurrency investing from zero to hero, right? To being able to invest with the best of them. If that makes sense.
It's like the Motley Fool for crypto.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. We're trying to be the best at that. But we're taking it a step further with software. We're trying to really, considering everything's open and public, and all the data is right in front of your face. A lot of people have been coming out with machine learning price prediction models and stuff like that. And we've been doing that with some AI and some people we got from MIT. So we'll see how that plays out.
We'll definitely be looking into that. And then I understand you also have a YouTube channel.
Yep. We have a YouTube channel where I educate the masses because cryptocurrency sucks and it's so hard. So you guys can go follow me, Alexander Lorenzo, the guy with the mustache. Cryptocurrency is the hardest thing. You have to learn macroeconomics. You have to learn finance. You have to learn tech all in one shot. So yeah,
definitely.
Great. And obviously, if somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in touch?
I think the best way would probably be through my Instagram, Alexander the Marketer. You could just type in Alexander the Marketer. There's going to be duplicate accounts. I'm going to tell you guys right now, the Bitcoin scammers are out for my name. So just make sure if you want to get my like real information, find me on YouTube and look for the Alexander the Marketer link on my YouTube description, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Got it. Well, Alex, I appreciate your insight today and the information. Hopefully that's helpful for somebody who's on the fence and deciding if they want to jump in the safe end of the pool or even into the deep end. But before we let you go, I'd like to turn it over to Justin for the Wealth Watchers Brain Pick.
Let's do it.
All right, Alex, we got 5 questions for you. First one's, what is your superpower or unique natural ability?
I think I can connect different types of people on a macro level and on a micro level.
If you were to go back 3 to 5 years, what might you have done differently that you wish you could have done?
I would have dropped more distractions. Most people think that adding more to your life gives you more productivity. It's actually the exact opposite. Sometimes you have to unlearn. So alcohol, weed, all that bad stuff, I would have dropped it a long time ago.
Got it. Good answer. And where are you headed in the next 3 to 5 years?
I'm going to create a software company. It's going to be the number one in cryptocurrency, $300 to $500 million in the next 3 to 5 years market cap.
Love it. Good luck on that. What is your favorite book on business or money?
All right. It's going to be kind of biased, but it's called The Bitcoin Standard. I'm going to tell you right now, the first 5 chapters does not even talk about Bitcoin. It teaches you what money is. Most people don't know what money is. And this teaches you the history of money and macroeconomics. I think it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Excellent. And what has been your biggest aha moment?
My biggest aha moment? I'll tell you one recently. Like I said, less is more. I had 2 daughters on the way, God bless them, and things have been gotten really rough. So if you're an entrepreneur and you got too much on your plate, you need to delegate. When you get to, you know, I mean, we're doing 6 figures every month, but if you're getting to the 7 figure per month, you need to delegate tasks and you need to put less on your plate and focus on what's really important to your business. For me, it's YouTube videos. So pretty much that holds priority over everything. I don't know how advanced your audience is, but if you're an entrepreneur, stop doing too much. You will lose. And I was losing because of that. So that was like my biggest recent aha moment, if that makes sense.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
Amen to that. Definitely. Yeah. we're definitely, I guess, still a work in progress on that too, but.
I know how it is, man. It'll drive you crazy. And the business going down is not your fault. It's not your fault. I know you should take it responsibility for it, but it's not your fault. And it will eat you alive if you make it your fault.
Yeah. Well, if you delegate and you focus on the things you're best at, you'll definitely find that you probably do a lot better. So,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, we appreciate you coming on today. Really grateful for your insight and for your time.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me as a guest.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of the Wealth Watchers Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lundy, for my co-host, Justin Hoggett, and I. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. And until next time.
This has been the Wealth Watchers Podcast. If you enjoyed this content, please subscribe and leave a review on your podcast player of choice. Join us on Facebook, where our members and guests are actively engaging in discussions on wealth-growing strategies by searching for Wealth Watchers Community on Facebook.